Question 30, and welcome to Inside Albania with me, Alice Taylor. Yesterday, the 8th of March, was International Women's Day and also Mother's Day. Now, for those that don't know, this is a chance to celebrate the social, economic and political achievements of women and girls the world over. It's also an important day to highlight the challenges that women and girls still face in our society. Now, I've invited to the studio with me today, in honour of this very, very special day, Alisa Dudaj, an Albanian fashion designer and the country representative for UN Women, Michele Ribota. Welcome to Inside Albania. Alisa, correct me if I'm wrong, but you were the first Albanian to show their collection at New York Fashion Week in February. How did this happen? What was that like for you? How did the show go?
So it was an amazing experience. Because I graduated from Parsons in Manhattan, New York City, I was one of their alumni. So someone there apparently suggested my name to attend New York Fashion Week after they saw my previous collections. And someone from their team, they reached out and they asked me if I wanted to be part of this.
What was your reaction?
I was extremely excited, and at first I didn't believe it. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a joke or a spam email, and I was staring at it and I was thinking, like, is this real or it's a lie? And then when I looked at it and I did my research, I saw that it was a real email and they were actually really wanted me to go there. So it was an amazing experience. So yeah.
And I mean, what was the process of putting on a show at such an event like this? I mean, how did you know where to start? What was involved in the organization?
So in the beginning, I didn't know where to start. I had no idea. I didn't know what I was doing. I just knew how many pieces I needed to showcase. And from there, I started thinking about the concept and where I wanted to get inspired from. And my brand is based on Albanian traditional and Albanian traditional clothing. So with those details, I continued to create a collection.
Now let's talk a bit more about that. So you use Albanian traditional handicrafts, artisan styles, methods in your work. But can you explain a bit more about where you get your inspiration from and which traditional elements you use in your clothing?
So most of the inspiration comes from the embroidery and crocheting and knitting in the Albanian traditional. And then sometimes I also look at the shapes of the garments that are traditional. This time I was looking at the shapes and also the embroidery because I wanted to make a modern collection that was more ready to wear since it was Fashion Week and things there need to be ready to wear. So yeah,
you had an opportunity to show these traditional Albanian styles to a completely new audience that have never been exposed to them. And what was people's feedback both in New York but also in Albania as well? Because this is a first that you've done.
So this is my first interview. A lot of people here, they were very excited and very proud to see, because maybe other people have done other Fashion Weeks, but I don't feel like anyone has taken like Albanian traditional motifs and embroidery and everything how they are and taken them into like ready to wear clothing and made a collection. So I think I might be one of the pioneers that is doing that. And everyone there was very excited and they didn't know what was on the clothing. And they were very curious to find out what the embroidery was and why everything looked a certain way. And with that, I had an opportunity to show my identity as an Albanian and also give some more like voice to like Albania and like let people know that, look, we exist as well and we make beautiful stuff.
Yes. Now, you made a dress a few months ago. I saw it for Ermanela Yaho, which was stunning. And she's amazing as well. And I wanted to ask you, Who else has worn your clothes? How far have your clothes that are inspired by Albania and Albanian traditions, how far have they gone across the world?
So it's very interesting. In New York, when I first shared my collection in Instagram and through other websites, also you were one of mm-hmm. the people that really helped me with writing about me in English. And a lot of people reached out from your article and also, from America, which was very interesting. Because they are very interested in handmade and mm-hmm. embroidered clothing. They don't want fast fashion anymore. They value the time that you put in creating the clothing.
And this is a point, sorry to interrupt, in Europe, in the UK as well, people are happy to pay a premium for traditional things that are made by hand. But then in Albania, I find it's the opposite at the moment. The younger generation, they want things from Shein, they want fast fashion. They're not interested in these older sort of traditions or influences, which I think is quite sad. Maybe it will change.
I think there's a shift. So in my opinion, it will change very fast. The problem I think that younger generations have right now is because of Instagram and other things that are more reachable and easily accessed, you feel like you need to have everything that you see. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why they want stuff that's more fast fashion. Because if you wear something once and you post it on Instagram, you don't feel like wearing it again.
I feel like that for my show, but then I feel wasteful,
Yeah, but there are solutions. Mm-hmm. And I feel like America, for example, and other European countries, they have found different solutions for these types of problems. Mm-hmm. And here I think we're going towards that with like rental dresses mm-hmm. and stuff like that to be less wasteful in a way. But yeah, we'll see.
Now another question, you studied in the US, you have people who are watching what you're doing over there, you've exhibited at Fashion Week, but you've come back to Albania. And you're living in Albania, you've set up an atelier here, she's employing local Albanian women, she's keeping the traditions and the craft alive. What was behind that decision and how is it going?
So I feel like it was a very good decision for me. It's a bit difficult to find people who are passionate about their job mm-hmm. and to keep them motivated, and where sometimes because of their job, they don't feel motivated enough to work. But I think it was a very important part for me to do that because since I'm Albanian and the clothing I'm making is traditional Albanian clothing in a way, it would be a bit unfair to take everything Albania has given me and just manufacturing China. It's like, or in America or someplace else. And I just felt I would be a bit unfair to like take everything for granted here and just walk away.
Mm-hmm. So, and the women that you've been working with, are they sort of from Tirana? Are they from other areas? How are you sort of expanding your network?
I have my atelier that the women there are from Tirana. So they live in Tirana. And then I outsource sometimes to make the doilies or crocheting or knitting with women from Durres, or I went to Shkodra as well mm-hmm. to see their artisanal skills and stuff like that. So I try to go everywhere and see what I can achieve, even though it's a bit difficult because you need to see how the process is going and everything.
Michele, maybe you know people from your travels around Albania and your line of work that maybe could work with Alisa in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for having me on your program, and lovely to hear the story of Alisa. I think we hear almost on a daily basis about Albanians wanting to leave the country, so this is really heartening to also see that there are stories of young entrepreneurs, young women entrepreneurs, that after having had experiences abroad, which is absolutely perfect, decided to make it back, to work it back, to try and use the local market, work with women. So very happy to also to connect you with the network we have. I think, we have For the first couple of years, we have supported a number of very small entrepreneurs in Albania in various fields, including artisans in the north, in the south, you know, women that do the work with traditional clothing, with traditional handicrafts. Speaking about small businesses, we see and we know that one of the key challenges, a little bit like along the lines that you were saying, some of the key challenges they've been facing is, first of all, access to markets, access to networks of possible customers, and of course, a little bit of push and advice and mentoring in terms of, you know, how to strengthen their business plans and things like that, and really how to create a network. Mm-hmm. So very happy to connect you with that. We have, for the first time last, I think it was November or September, we have organized a Women Expo of women entrepreneurs in Albania, and there is also a system of trying to promote healthy competition among ideas for businesses, and then be able to select a few and try to support with a little bit of financial support if they need some equipment to start the business or just advice. Mm-hmm. Advice to how to plan for the business.
And what do you see, especially in the more rural areas, what are the main barriers to women taking this step towards entrepreneurship?
Well, I mean, the rural areas, first of all, I think because of the sort of the economic sort of dynamics and characteristics of the country, rural areas are of course, the main vocation is agriculture and rural agricultural work mostly. So we know that most of the women are informally employed in agriculture. I think we have seen a number of cases in the past few years of women who kind of try to make it, step it up and start their own businesses, especially in the agritourism sector. Mm-hmm. I think there is, when it comes to women entrepreneurship, there are a number of challenges that the country is still facing, although, of course, things are changing and things are improving and evolving. We know that they have, when it comes to agribusiness sectors, they have a lot of still challenges to actually be able to access to land titles, to property rights, despite legislation being absolutely sort of equalizing, the opportunities.
In what way are they struggling if the legislation's there? Well,
because I think there is a question of, many times we see that laws are reformed, laws are fixed in order to be able to be in line with international norms and standards. But when the actual practical implementations of the law also has to face, the social conservative norms that we still sometimes still see in rural areas. So there is a tradition, there is an assumption that, for example, land ownership would be transmitted across patriarchal lines. And this, we see that it continues to be the case much more often than it should. So that's one of the, surely one of the challenges that we see.
Does this patriarchal sort of idea system, does this impact women as well? Because I had a friend in leisure, she has an artisan studio, which she makes traditional clothing. And she said a lot of the women she wants to work with, they're not allowed to come to work in her studio. She has to send and collect the work to and from them because their husbands want them to stay at home.
Absolutely.
Maybe there's not, the local kindergarten is only open till 12 o'clock or there's not one nearby. Is this something you encounter and you as well?
Yeah, we do. We see that, we work in a few local areas and we see that one of the key challenges that women face is also the space that they have to get together, to participate, to actually have agency over their own lives. Because again, there is this deeply entrenched norms according to which, it is the man of the family who's supposed to decide what to do, to go to local councils and represent family interest in whatever gathering or assembly. So we see it, we try to support, we have something which we call local action group of women that we try to overcome even the barriers from women themselves, because sometimes, they are the first ones to say, I'd love to do that, but I can't because, so it's not something that is going to change overnight, but it's something that we should absolutely prioritize because patriarchy works against women. It works against men as well.
But, is this something you've encountered as well?
Yes, with some women that I've talked to that they wanted a job and they wanted to work for themselves, they had to tell me that, oh, wait a second, I need to go and ask my husband if I can do that. And usually the answer back is no. They cannot go to work or like things like that. But I feel like maybe there are solutions to this, as you said, like bring them work to their homes so they can work from the comfort of their house.
And for their husband's comfort.
Yeah, but still, I don't know. It's like, it's the place here that still has some people that have that kind of mentality, but I feel like it will change.
Yes, you can't force it, but in time it will develop. Now, I brought you both here today because yesterday was Women's Day, and I know that when this goes online, there are going to be comments underneath it saying, well, when's International Men's Day? Why do women have a national international day and we don't? It happens every year. It's so predictable. So I put to you, why do we still have International Women's Day in 2024?
I mean, if we want to respond with it with a kind of a joke, we could say that every other day is Men's Day. But you know, the thing is, I still believe in the power of international occurrences, especially when it comes to women's rights. I think they are helpful. I think they can help, you know, create the critical mass of attention, amplify the messages. But on a couple of conditions again, that, you know, it's not a question about speaking about women's rights just once a year, number one. And number two is that we should really see this as an opportunity for unifying men and women against a common cause. I mean, this idea that, you know, women's right works against men's right is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. We know it. We have plenty of global evidence that shows that by creating a platform of equal opportunities for everybody in society, the whole society benefits. So, you know, we should really try to work and help mostly men understand and do not feel threatened by the idea of recognizing that there are still gaps, a lot of gaps when it comes to equal opportunities, and it should be firstly in their interest to do so.
Now, you mentioned gaps, and, you know, I think now in 2024, it does vary a bit in terms of what those gaps are, how serious they are between different regions and countries. When we look at Albania, I think certain gaps are more visible than in other countries. And I wanted to ask you, what do you think are the most pressing matters for women in this country at the moment?
I mean, earlier we were speaking about patriarchy and conservative norms and stereotypes. That's a massive challenge, and it's one that unfortunately cannot be solved overnight. So it requires a lot of sustained efforts and work, and this has repercussions across all aspects of women's life. Now, you know, we heard the story of Aliza. The certainly economic participation of women across the world and in this region and in Albania is still a big challenge. Mm-hmm. I think we have still a fairly wide gap when it comes to labor participation between men and women. We're talking about 12, 13 points gap. Again, this is shrinking over the years. We see that, you know, things are moving in the right direction. Perhaps we would hope to see changes a bit more faster. So that's one thing. The other thing that we still see is that, again, one direct product of patriarchy and conservative norms is the issue of gender-based violence and the issue of multiple forms of discrimination, so marginalizations of specific groups of women. So those are some of the areas that still concerns us a lot. I don't think it's an issue necessarily of policies and legislation. I think the political leadership over the years and across party lines, they've done a lot of efforts to actually put the country in line with the overall international standards, but a lot of issues in terms of implementation because of several reasons.
Yes. Aliza, what do you think are the biggest challenges facing women in Albania today?
I feel like misunderstanding, because I've seen a lot of talk shows in Albania, for example, talk about feminism and other subjects that surround feminism. And I've seen men understand feminism as women like
attacking men, hating
exactly.
men.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And they don't understand that the definition is the equality of the genders. Mm-hmm. So I think that with them understanding that it's about equality and not women being superior to men, I think that would be a very good step. So, for example, the talk shows, they need to emphasize the equality rather than saying, oh, I'm a feminist, and then see them like fighting with each other. And also in schools, I think when you teach a young generation how they should see themselves and how they should work on themselves and other subjects like that, I feel like you can teach them young to be a certain way, so they don't have to look up only to their parents as like their like examples, but they can also learn something more from schools that listen, like, okay, your parents act a certain way, maybe their parents are fine, but when they hear like a different opinion and like their teachers telling them like, look, you can do this and that, it's much better, I feel, for them.
I have my daughter, she's 4, and she comes home and she'll say, oh yeah, but girls can't play football. And I'm like, where did you get that from? You know, like, you've been playing football since you were in my tummy, you know? And she has a Spider-Man t-shirt, and she used to love this t-shirt, like, it's got holes in it, she loves it. I went to put it on, and she was like, no, because Spider-Man's for boys. And I'm like, it's not, you know, trying to unlearn some of these things she's picked up in the playground or whatever. It's a challenge. There was another topic I wanted to talk about as well that's been in the media quite a lot recently. And this is to do with social media. And I find this terrifying because when I was a kid, we didn't have social media. When I was a teenager, we started with like MySpace and things like that. But the social media that we have today is just, I mean, it's a world away from what I remember. And we've seen in Albania recently, there have been 2 incidents since the beginning of the year, 2 probable suicides. We don't know the full extent of what went on that was due to women being bullied on social media, particularly TikTok. And this is not just a phenomenon in Albania, it's happening in other countries as well. But it does seem to, I've seen some of the statistics from the cybercrime department at the police, which show that it's mainly women that are, and young girls that are suffering from this phenomenon. And I wanted to ask what your view on this is. And I mean, social media is so out of our control in a way. How can we protect women and girls from this?
Okay, look, first of all, I need to caveat that I'm perhaps, personally speaking, I'm not the best person to speak about social media because of age reasons. Guys, I am mostly not on social media. Mm-hmm. I am in a few platforms only for job-related. Yes. Otherwise, I would happily not be on social media. Mm-hmm. I think that's a whole other conversation. Yeah. I also was born with no social media. And I am, when this all online internet revolutions came about and we were told that this is going to expand our freedoms and it's going to strengthen democracies and it's going to make our life happier. I mean, I'm not entirely sure that, you know, this really held true, but that's a separate conversation. Two things we have observed on when it comes to social media as an instrument. One, on the positive note, last year we supported a youth-led study on the linkages in Albania and in the surrounding countries from the Western Balkans. It was sort of on the issue of trying to articulate linkages between social cohesion and gender equality. Mm-hmm. One of the things that this big group of youngsters came agreed upon is that social media has a huge potential for youth participation, to actually expand your participation, to help, especially in this sub-regional context, to sort of, strengthen opportunities for networking, strengthening, cohesions across cultures, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's something. And in fact, we've been following through with that recommendations. We've launched about a month ago a campaign that is called Imagine on social media, using also media professionals and influencers to really try and rewrite a little bit the narratives that are still sort of defining so much the region in so many negative terms all too often. So that's, I think, the good news. Mm-hmm. The bad news is that it's another study we've done on a larger set of countries in Europe on this specific issue of digital violence against women. And we have seen, unfortunately, I mean, we have had the confirmation that the cyberspace is just another space where if you have a society that is characterized by violence and abuse against women, cyberspace will inevitably sort of reproduce those patterns. So the numbers are pretty scary. In fact, Albania seems to be one of those with the lowest levels of incidence, but we still are talking about almost 1 in 2 female users of social media having experienced abuse. Social digital violence being defined as anything that happens online, whether it's a breach of your account, circulating documents or information without your consent, and you name it, that is done for the purpose of harming the individual. So the issues is extremely serious and should be prioritized.
And you online, as a younger woman, what's your experience? Are you one of these one in two? Have you had issues like this with your work? Or
no, fortunately, I never had any like problems with that. My personal profile is different than my work profile are two different things. So my personal is private. I only have people I know personally. And for my work profile, I haven't received any. No, I actually have. I remember now. From other women, Albanian women, like just random comments, which weren't mean, but they were just weird and just uncalled for.
Necessary.
I didn't take them very seriously. I was like, okay, she's having a bad day. She didn't know where to get her frustration out. And she came to my page. So I really don't mind, but they have sent it on direct messages and not left a comment.
Now, my last question is to you. Between now and next Women's Day, UN Women, what are your key sort of focuses, aims, goals, hopes, desires for the next 12 months?
Wow, that's a big question. I mean, our hopes is to be able to continue to you know, follow on the work we've been doing so far. We've been focusing a lot of our work. We try to diversify our work. We work a lot in Tirana with institutions on the what we call gender-related governance aspects of gender issues. You know, it's a lot about doing with the, for example, EU accession and EU integration. So trying to accompany the EU accession process from the point of view of a gender equality law EU commitment. So there's a lot of that. Now, going back to International Women's Day, the theme of this year is about investing in women and accelerating progress. So that I think that would capture what we would want to see over the next 12 days. We work a lot on gender-responsive budgeting, which is translated in simple terms, is about helping institutions in Tirana, ministries in Tirana, and municipalities at the local level to try and make sure that their budget allocation processes are really grounded on an analysis and an understanding of what the gaps based on gender and sort of persisting patterns of discriminations they see in their communities. So that's a big thing for us.
Well, and I hope to see exciting things from you in the year ahead. And I hope you two can connect on some issues as well. Alisa, Michele, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That's all for this week. But over the next few weeks, Euronews Albania is showing Formula One racing. So there's been a few changes to the schedule. You can watch Inside Albania on our YouTube channel, Euronews Albania, at 5 p.m. every Saturday. But to see it on TV, you can follow my social media accounts, Instagram and Twitter, Alice in Albania, to find out exactly when it will be shown. Until next week, Mira Pavsim.